Welcome to the Tile SM podcast, episode 348, where you find us in incredibly good spirits after back-to-back wins in the league for the first time in a long time. Joining me, as always, is my co-host, Ross. We've just been talking about length hair off air, which has been quite an interesting story. You got any hair anecdotes you want to share with us, Ross, before we get going?
Hair anecdotes that I want to share with people. Oh man, that's a tricky one. People don't know my hair is incredibly long and has been for quite a while. I guess I don't have any particular hair anecdotes right now, but I think that might be the correlation between my wife liking Andy Carroll and my wife liking me. So,
true. Yeah. Well, I mean, I went to the Turkish barbers off Overdown Road in Tolhurst. Some of you may know it, and they cut my hair very, very short. So I not in hiding, but it's just very short. It's something that I need to get used to. Anyway, we're waffling on. We've got loads of things to talk about. Two wins against Cheltenham and, of course, Stevenage. But before we do that, first of all, massive thanks to ZCZ Films, who sponsor us as always, give us financial pats on the back and make sure that we're doing the best that we can do with the Tilehurst End, not just the podcast, but all the amazing articles that are up and running and regular, actually. You know, we're pretty good at putting content out regularly. So if you haven't looked already, have a look on our social media sites and, of course, our main website. Yeah. And if you need to get in touch with us, got the Gmail account, but you can also get hold of myself, Ross, Sim, anyone at the Tilehurst End, really, and we'll kind of go from there. So
And Ben, you're right, sorry not to cut in, but you're right, there's been a lot of really good content on the Tilehurst End website over the last couple of weeks. Got some good new writers, got some good people returning this season, so yeah, check it out.
We are going to head straight into the recap, where we've got two games to discuss. So join us straight after this short message and we will get straight into the Cheltenham game.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
Right, we're recording this on Thursday evening, quite late my time, but kind of lunchtime for Ross. And we've kind of just... We put it off because we just couldn't get our diary sorted, basically, not because we couldn't be bothered. And I know a lot of you were probably very worried that we'd disappeared, but we haven't. We just delayed this week, which has given us more time to kind of assess and think about those games, really. Cheltenham, Ross, was kind of over a week ago now, and kind of, dare we say it, kick-started this revival. Is it a revival? I mean, it's two games, isn't it? But, you know, as we've said all along, it's been really slim pickings for us. What, for you, were the main takeaways from that Cheltenham game?
I think it was just good to have a game whereby we took a 1-0 lead all the way through to the final whistle, right? Like, that was nice. I remember, I think maybe it was a game against Luton or somebody else towards the end of last season that seemed like a game we could have got some points out of. Maybe, you know, even if we'd won that, that would have been another 2 points. We would have stayed up in the championship. And we gave away the lead pretty late in the game. So it felt like it had been a while since we had to, like, get our backs to the wall and grind. And don't get me wrong, Cheltenham weren't amazing. We had 61% possession, we had more shots, all that kind of good stuff, but we're certainly not a team yet that can rely on 1-0 wins, or at least it hasn't felt like that for a while. So yeah, it was just great to see them actually win 1-0 and defend a lead, right? Like, that, you know, bringing in the kids is normally something that you do and you expect to get explosiveness and exciting play, maybe a little bit more loosey-goosey on the defense, but no, we brought two kids into the defense and they've gone ahead and kept two clean sheets so far.
I mean, it's, you know, we said on podcast 347, which is still available as a back issue wherever you get your podcasts from, that the team selection was going to be really key. And, you know, as we're not going to go through the team now, but Ross has alluded to the fact that we had, you know, basically the Millwall team from the cup a few weeks prior, or a week prior actually, kind of come in and basically play the first league game together. And one of the things that I was really, really impressed with, and we saw green shoots, you know, not to blow our own trumpets, but we saw parts of this with some of those players against Peterborough. You know, Vickers is a good example of that. You know, Ross was very complimentary about Iha Bitterman. I wasn't too sure at that point. It's probably a bit naive of me, really, but Ross was like, no, he's going to come good. And, you know, we'll get onto Stevenage in a minute. But, you know, the thing that really, really impressed me was the intensity of how they were playing. And you're right, look, Cheltenham weren't great. Like, it was overall, it was a pretty ugly game. I thought, you know, second half, we made it a lot more difficult for ourselves than we needed to. And I still think we need some extra depth up front. But, you know, I still stand by that statement. But, you know, there were real green shoots from that team, from a very green young team. And yeah, actually, you know, as you said, you know, we're having a debate about this on the WhatsApp group, but with your ratings, Ross, you know, it was quite easy to score high with some of those players because Nelson Abbey was just absolutely outstanding. And the guy that that I was really impressed with was Kamara because, you know, from an emotional backstory point of view, like I said previously, I thought he was really hard done by Paul Ince. I think there was a lot of opportunities that he could have been brought in to do a job and he wasn't. But I thought Kamara was absolutely outstanding. I really did. And it was nice to see, you know, we... It's wrong to say we criticised him, but, you know, we both said that wing probably wasn't up to scratch and he came on and did a good job. Just to kind of round off the Cheltenham game, was there anyone else, you know, from a tactical point of view, Ross, that you thought, you know what, we've got a player here?
Do you know, I think I will return just to Kelvin briefly, because I think that you made a good point too, where you're talking about needing more strikers. But Kelvin has so far come good and played well. And I think that part of why that is because he actually allows us to play in the way that we want to play. And he can move around and he can press. But his movement in the box and his movement up top to just kind of keep opposition center backs, you know, occupied and keep them having to deal with him rather than being able to look at the speedy players like Vickers or Aziz or Kamara who might be coming at them, or Mbenge of all people coming at them. Kelvin is sort of like the linchpin there, so even when he's not playing incredibly well, having a ton of touches right now, he's doing everything you want from a role perspective. He's holding the back line back. In terms of goal scoring, we'll talk about the Stevenage game. I don't know if he's going to score two or maybe three if he wasn't offside every single week. I do think that, you know, eventually a very young striker is going to go through a bit of a rough period. But what we've seen so far, really, really encouraging. So it's great to see.
I mean, one of the key things for Cheltenham as well was, you know, I watched the highlights the day after, you know, still on cloud nine. Kind of, I can't remember last, well, February, it would have been February against Blackpool that last time I saw a win. And I was just getting my voice back. But one of the things that I kind of missed in the game in real time was this kind of almost like this hunting in pairs, like this kind of two, constantly pressing the ball. And you know, there's been a lot of talk about players that may be out of the side at the moment. You know, Ajara is obviously coming back. We talked about him previously. You know, we've had Holmes and Carroll. Holmes definitely phrasing out. Carroll kind of bit part player, really. And Yeardom and McIntyre. And obviously Guinness Walker as well. So there's a lot of stuff floating around with those players. But what's been interesting is that, you know, as you pinpointed a couple of weeks ago, Ross, Sellers really wants to play in a certain way. And, you know, as we said, however kind of disappointing the result against Port Vale was, it probably gave him a wake-up call to go, hold on a second, we've got to do something quite quickly here, because it's either going to be, I'm going to stick with the players that have been here for X amount of years and have ultimately not done very well, not necessarily because of their fault, but just because of the way the club's been set up and the managerial situation.
Well, and everyone talked about like sort of how this summer might be when like a reset needs to happen before. Yeah. I think a lot of people talked about that before, like the tax issues and things like that we were having. But a reset in terms of personnel is always going to be somewhat painful. It's always going to be, you know, walking off a cliff eventually with some players. And Holmes and Carroll, Nesta Guinness Walker, they're all players that certainly have their defenders and they've had great moments in Reading shirts. But if they're not going to be the players that are going to move this group forward, then financially, you know, if we're showing some literacy and that we need to move some players on, that's a step in the right direction. So yeah, there's always some difficult stuff when you're in a reset.
And I think what was really good is that actually, you know, he didn't make any changes to the Stevenage game. I think I'm second guessing myself, and I don't think he did he?
Sam Hutchinson, I think, was the only one who came in for Lewis Wing.
That's right. Yeah, my bad. It's like a long time ago. And also, I didn't go to the Stevenage games. That's my excuse, right? Talking Wapham again. But, you know, he kind of kept with the bulk of that team, which was really positive, because actually what we're seeing now is some consistency. You know, before we get on to the potential downside of picking the same team again, and there is, I think there will be a bit of a downside moving forward. What, you know, how did you feel about the Stevenage game? Obviously, it's great to get the win, mm-hmm. but from an aesthetic point of view, from a tactical point of view, was it much the same as Cheltenham? Different type of opposition, because obviously Stevenage were coming in a little bit more confident, well, a lot more confident than Cheltenham were. What was your overall kind of take from the Stevenage game?
Stevenage game obviously changed, you know, fairly early on when that red card came in for Nathan Thompson, right? So that was only 22 minutes in, and it very much limited the way in which Stevenage were able to attack, in that they were going to an almost entirely long ball structure. If anybody hasn't read it and they're on Twitter, there's an excellent thread from a Stevenage fan called Ben Adsheed. I hope I've got your name right there, Ben. But I retweeted that on my account. Go take a look, because they did an excellent review showing some of those things that Ben was talking about a moment ago, players hunting in packs. It was a similar performance, and the team are getting, you know, better at they're getting better at actually like executing with these tactics that Ruben Sellers wants to run. But I will put a quick pin in Stevenage, because last week you asked me about David Button and how I felt about that. And obviously there's a little bit of umming and ahhing about him when he came in. He hasn't played a full season of football in quite a while now. Button was excellent in the Stevenage game. And there was a short period, maybe 30 minutes or so into the game, where, you know, Reading were under quite a lot of pressure from Stevenage, and Button kept us, you know, kept that score at 0-0. And if we go into that second half and it's 1-0 to Stevenage, and all they've got to do is shut up shop, they've got a much easier task ahead of them than actually having to, like, you know, expand their play, try and go and get something when they're a goal down. So, yeah, I thought Button was excellent and allowed Reading to play in the way that they wanted to on Saturday.
And obviously, we can't talk about that game without, you know, mentioning Iha Bitterman. And there's kind of not a bad time to score a goal. But, you know, scoring just before halftime in kind of injury time as he did, and then sort of 10 minutes after the restart, that pretty much puts it to bed. And, you know, this team, the way that they are developing, and they are still developing, there was no way they were going to throw that away. You know, possession-wise, I think it was 70-71%, which you'd probably expect, or you would expect against, you know, a side that's gone down to 10 men. But that was still on the kind of the high side, as it was against Cheltenham, against 11. Yeah. So there are kind of consistent threads that we can pull out of this team, really. You know, in terms of watching both of those games, what was your kind of overall feeling about where we are as a club right now, and where the potential is moving forward with, you know, not necessarily just the starting 11, mm-hmm. but the squad that is starting to be built almost daily now in terms of getting players back? You know, players have kind of, there's not been a big explosion of signings particularly. They're kind of drip fed through. Drip fed through into the club itself. What, you know, where are you at as a Reading fan right now after those two games?
I'm pretty encouraged. I don't think that every week is going to end with 6 points or 5 points, I suppose, because we had 1 point deduction.
Yeah, we haven't even talked about that, have we?
Very odd. Very, very odd. I think the encouraging thing for me is that they're improving defensively over the last few games, while, like, there's this excitement about the way in which Sellers wants to attack and go forward very quickly, and how we want to press from the front. So, you know, we are going to be hopefully receiving the ball again within, like, the opposition's half. It hasn't come with also losing out on some defensive grit, which has been great. I think that some of the Southampton fans last season were saying that, you know, Sellers could be quite defensively solid when he wanted to. So maybe this isn't too surprising, but I think it's really encouraging. One thing that came out of the last two games, Reading are forcing the pass accuracy for their opposition down way lower than you'd often see for other teams. So Reading's pass accuracy somewhere between 70 and 85% most games now, which is great. They're making a lot of short passes, obviously, so it makes your life a little bit easier. But they forced a 50% pass accuracy rate out of Stevenage the other day. And obviously Stevenage are a long ball team. So they're chucking up a lot of balls that, you know, are going to be a little bit easier to defend. But I didn't think that Nelson Abbey or Tyler Bindon, while they were great, I didn't think they were incredible in the air. I think that was their best element just yet. And yet they're still, you know, intercepting a load of balls, causing, or part of the unit that's causing the ball to come back to Reading quite so often. So we're keeping the ball, and you can see where it's coming from. It's coming from forcing other teams to try and make passes that are just more difficult. So, yeah, it's really encouraging so far. I wouldn't be upset if we saw a few more signings come in, but I think Salas has shown us it has to be the right kind of signing, and it has to be somebody who's not going to disrupt the mentality in the locker room at all. So,
yeah. I mean, I think the positive is that he is now starting to, you know, fully stamp his authority on the club and on the team, and in terms of getting a blueprint going. And, you know, my main takeaway from watching the Cheltenham game, but then also having a look at the highlights of Stevenage, is that it's exciting. Like, there's actually spells like, yeah, you know, not quite like, oh my God, this is amazing football, but compared to what we've been used to. And, you know, like when Vickers ran free for the goal against Cheltenham, I was literally standing up at that point. I was like, just keep going, you know, and obviously it came off a ricochet and an own goal. But like, there's a lot to get behind. There's you know, someone used a term on X, as we call it now, right, which still doesn't seem right to me. It just doesn't, I can't get mad around it, whatever. You know, they're likable, and that's actually pretty true. You know, just to kind of round off this last week, there was the open training session, which some of you listening to this might have gone to. I didn't get an invite because I basically forgot to renew my season tickets until like the day before the season started, because that shows you the type of fan I am. Just completely forgot about it. Don't know how I expected that was going to happen, but whatever. But Bobbins has written like a really good report on that, and someone made the point about potentially doing it annually. That's a really, whoever's in the dugout, like, that's a really important thing, because it's, you know, there was a lot of kind of dialogue around, yeah, oh, the club have forgotten about it, like it's a mess, blah, 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 like it was in the summer. But actually, like, you know, connecting and being able to see what goes on, you know, almost on a daily basis is a really positive thing. So if you haven't checked it out yet, have a look, because that's up on all the media sites and the website as well. We're going to head into the mailbag. There's a few bits to get into. So we'll do that after this short message.
Keep up to date with all things Reading FC. Follow the Tilehurst End on Facebook and Twitter.
This podcast is proudly sponsored by ZCZ Films. Remember, if you want to get involved in sponsoring the show, drop us an email to thetilehurstend@gmail.com.
Right, Ross, first question for you, just faffing around with my phone here. Right, we'll start with Ryan Jeffress, who's actually going to be a guest on our pod in a couple of weeks' time. So he's kind of well up for chatting with us, Ross, which we know about. But he asks, who has the highest potential out of Kelvin E, Vickers and Abbey? Ooh. Boom, you can start that one, because that's a proper meaty question.
That is a meaty question. I'm going to briefly talk about ceilings and floors. And obviously, when you're assessing an athlete, your ceiling is how good they could be, and your floor is like how bad they could be, right? I see Kelvin as a, let's call him like a high floor, medium ceiling player. So I think that what we're getting out of Kelvin now is great. Like, and I think that he will improve. Don't get me wrong. I'm not 100% convinced that he'll go on to be much more than a championship player at this time, just from what I've seen so far. But the wonderful thing about football punditry is you get to be wrong three times a week. So hopefully he does come through really well. Vickers for me is the one who has the highest ceiling and the lowest floor, right? So like, Vickers could completely fall off in a few weeks' time and become the next Sam Baldock, because he's got that sort of smaller build and, you know, he's clearly energetic and things like that. And if people work him out, then he might have some trouble. But with the amount of skill that we've seen from him already, the fact that he seems to be like, he's not necessarily super fast, but he just seems to be a little bit ahead of the play a lot of the time. His agility is great. I think Vickers has the highest ceiling of any of those players.
The thing I like about him, Russ, he's very perceptive. Mm-hmm. So he watches runs off the ball. He's always anticipating the knockdown. He's always anticipating the through ball, even if it doesn't come to him. And he does, you know, you look at the shape of the way. I was watching a lot of how Cheltenham set up defensively with him. He was pulling them out quite a lot, you know, and drawing them out to make the space for you know, for Kelvin to run into and kind of Savage knocking the ball through. So there's a lot of tactical football knowledge, I think, there with Vickers, for sure. Abby, what are you saying?
Oh, that's a tricky one.
I think he's going to be a monster. I really do.
Yeah.
I say lazy. A lot of people compared him to, you know, to Sonko and obviously Bindon with Ingram Arsene. Personally, that's a lazy comparison because football's moved on, obviously, tactically and, you know, professionally in the time that Sonko left our club. I think Abby is, you know, there were times when I was watching him against Cheltenham and in the highlights against Stevenage, and I was like, how long has he been playing for?
Yeah.
The thing that really got me was the pace.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, you think, oh, he's well behind here. And he would just glide through, you know, kind of just to get in front of the player and just knock it past him. So for me, I know I've asked you the question, but I'm jumping in.
No, please.
I think he's going to be massive for this football club. I really do.
All right.
Would you agree with that? You've got to agree with that now.
I wouldn't want to start any fights here, but no, I agree that Abby's going to be a good player. Don't get me wrong at all. I think I'm like, in terms of like, who could be who has the highest potential? I think it's Vickers, but I think that's partly like to do with, you know, that part of your football, I almost called it soccer, the part of your football brain that, you know, enjoys watching strikers and the attack play more, like the part of your brain that when you were a kid was disappointed when you got put on defense in attack versus defense. Like, I think I've just got that part of my brain that likes attackers more. So yeah, no, Abby's going to be a great player, and the physical attributes are worth noting. Like you said, the pace is really impressive. I'm still in love with the little double tap move that I saw from Vickers week one. So I think highest potential for me is Vickers. Which is really rude to Kelvin.
Well, yeah, I mean, but it's a great question there, Ryan. And you know, we're looking forward to having you on the pod in a couple of weeks. We're not a closed shop here at TTE. We do take
guests.
Talking of Vickers, Benjamin Vickers is back with another stunner of a question. I don't think you're a relation to Benjamin to Kaelin, are you, Vickers? I don't think, Benjamin, that you're a relation to Kaelin Vickers, but who knows? I don't know. Just let us know if you are.
Yeah.
I note Sellers replaces both wing-backs every game at 60 to 70 minutes. Last few games has been in Benga, Yeardom and Carson T-Mac. Haven't even talked about Carson this podcast, and we're like 27 minutes into it. And Benga, Yeardom seems a straight swap. But why Carson for T-Mac is NGW not trusted? Let's talk about Nesta, because obviously there's been a couple of clubs that have been sniffing around him. His the general crux of it is, why is he using Yeardom T-Mac and not Nesta, basically?
Yeah.
I mean, I have my theories on it, but from your point of view, Ross, where are you at with Nesta at the moment?
So I think especially with the last few games, like a lot of this question comes down to game state, right? And Yeardom and T-Mac are being thrown onto the game when Reading are defending a lead the last two games. And for me, there's a really good player in Nesta Guinness-Walker, but I just not super convinced by him in a back four. I think that he can attack well. I think that he can defend well. I'm not super convinced he can do both at the same time for a full 90 minutes or even a full 70 minutes. So I think that when T-Mac comes on, you know, we've seen him at left back before. I wouldn't call it his best position. I probably wouldn't call it his second best position, to be honest. But it's not super, you know, rare to see him play there. And I just think it's a case of Sellers trusts him both with the ball at his feet and defending more than he does with Nesta from a tactical perspective.
The problem with Nesta is that I don't want to do him a disservice here, but I honestly think he's quite overrated, because actually last season we were really scrabbling for bright sparks and he had a couple of good games. And they were good games, to be fair. But because of that, I think there is a bit of a lack of understanding of how he fits into a system in general.
That's a great way of putting it. I'll ask you, Ben. I think he's a left wing back. I don't think he's a left back.
Yeah, he is. And we're not going to do that anytime soon. So your point about in a back four, 100%. I don't see him being an out and out left back at all.
No,
if he had license to get forward, then great. You know, the rare occasions that he was able to get forward last year or last season, I literally can't think of the games that there was someone who was like, wow, he's got pace here. Mm-hmm. You know, and he likes to attack defensively, no chance. Again, we're just blokes with opinions. That's, you know, we're not trying to do him a disservice, but it's a really good question. Yeah. I just feel like, you know, out of the other three that we're talking about here, Yeardom, I'm not really sure how much he's got left in the tank generally at this club. And you know, T-Mac, for me, I would be gobsmacked if he doesn't play in centre midfield against Ipswich in the cup in a couple of weeks, because actually, that, for me, I think that's his best position. But Sellers has just got to see that a little bit more. Like, I think you just need to get him out of defence now. So that's, I think that's where we're at with those. Bourbon Leprechaun, make of that what you will.
All right.
With rumours circulating of a majority of first team players out for sale, how much depth will the team have going forward, especially if we lose any of our current starters? Right. Earlier, you might recall I mentioned there's a downside to playing teams that are basically the same consecutively. My concern, and it is a concern at this stage, not a full-blown worry because they're different things, on the anxiety scale, is that basically the football anxiety scale, is that there is a lot of exuberance in that team and a lot of energy. And, you know, kind of, and people roll their eyes, but the way I compare them to it is actually when wrestlers first start out, they're like professional wrestlers, they're completely over the top. They want to hit all those high spots. They want to get the crowd going, which is great, right? But actually career-wise, that's not a good longevity thing. Mm. Now, I'm not comparing our current first team to professional wrestlers. I'm sure they've got the same fitness level. But, you know, they're only a brass challenge or a kind of an overstretch run away from doing damage to their bodies. And my concern, and at first I was like, you know what? I think it's a good thing these players are effectively being kind of secretly transfer listed. My concern is that actually you lose the depth then. Now, I'm not saying that we should just keep them because their bodies and they're fit and all the rest of it. They've got to be the right players. But actually, if it comes to pass that, you know, realistically, Guinness, Walker, Holmes, potentially Carroll, I don't see T-Mac leaving. I doubt Yeardon will.
Yeah.
Those three, okay, they're not kind of in the plans long term, probably even short term, but we're still losing three bodies. And that, for me, is quite a concern at this stage. I don't know how you feel about that one, Ross, really.
Yeah, I definitely see where you're coming from. And I think it's worth pointing out, too, that the style that Sellers has us playing is a very energetic style that requires a lot of intensity from all of the players, especially those attacking players that are having to cover a lot of ground, having to, you know, press their opposite numbers and things like that. So you do see sometimes, I mean, Bielsa, who managed Leeds and Marseille and a bunch of other clubs, he's the great example of a manager who would have teams play great for the first half of the season, and then they'd just be completely on their, you know, on their hindquarters by the, you know, by January. So, yeah, I could see that happening because, you know, like, we're certainly bringing in a lot of players who haven't played like a full season of football before, and we're asking them to play pretty intense style against a quite physical league in League One. So if we are going to get rid of Carroll, Holmes, and Nesta, then, you know, like, I think we will need to bring in more bodies, but I think that honestly gives us a chance to bring in bodies that are more suited to this style, right? Like, we've just talked about Nesta being more of a wing back. So while it wouldn't be great to lose, you know, like depth, I don't know how much it's helpful to have Andy Carroll sitting around on the bench for 3 months if he's not actually starting.
True. Got to be the right players, hasn't it? Right players, which is what every club wants. Yeah, good question that, though. I like that one. Nathan Oakes says, going off the feeling, League One, I feel, will be a tighter division than first thought. My fun fact of the week, Ross, is that not one team in League One has a 100% record yet.
Oh, nice. Okay.
They can't have a 100% record because it's not like they're going to get it back, but like they don't have a 100% record. And that's after four games, which I think is quite, you know, that's quite crazy. So he's right. I think it is a lot tighter than we first thought. You know, the Bolton game, digressing a little bit, Wigan beating them 4-0. Wow. What a result that was. So, you know, fair play to Wigan because that's a tough place they've been. But anyway, I'm digressing. With an emphasis on youth this season, do you believe that we are going through a transition to mount a promotion challenge next year, or should we now be aiming higher? We're definitely doing it this year, Nathan. We're 100% going to be.
HMS pissed the league with a bunch of kids. Yeah.
Like, yeah, let's have it. Let's do it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a good question. You know, I kind of had to pinch myself a little bit and kind of take reality checks quite regularly because it's like we've won two games in the league on the bounce. We've beaten Cheltenham and Stevenage, and that brings me on to the next question in a minute. But you know, is this are we kind of expecting this to be the norm now, or do you think this is going to be the blip? And as a result of that, do you think that really we are going to be aiming higher, or do you think actually, you know, it goes back to what we talked about last week in terms of expectations, but you know, where are we at? We're excited, we're pleased. Yeah. We're buzzing, but realistically, you know, what is our aim now?
I think there's definitely going to be points at which we flirt with the playoffs this season. And we may even stick around in there for a little bit, for at some point, but just like with what we've been talking about with the depth, with the, you know, with how close we are to quite a rough summer and with the fact that a bunch of kids are being asked to play a very intense style in their first season, there will be a drop off at some point. I do think that Sellers is going to last the season, and I think that we're going to be able to build on this next season. But I said 10th at the start of the year, and that's kind of still what I'm thinking. I wouldn't be surprised if we finish 10th and like within 6 points of the playoffs. So it's a, you know, a season where we really do get to flirt with, you know, some sort of excitement. But honestly, that would be exciting, right? Like a mid-table finish and no worry of relegation whatsoever is a holiday for Reading fans right now. So if we even flirt with the playoffs, I would say that's a pretty good season and gives us great grounding for the next season.
I think flirting's good. I'm happy with flirting. It's fairly like low risk as well,
right?
All about the football here, by the way. But like, you know, in terms of actually moving it forward and where we're at with this young side, you know, kind of building those pieces and what, you know, what you've said there about Sellers staying, that's kind of what we want. Like,
yeah,
we want a manager to at least see out the season. That'll be really novel at this club in recent years. I don't know. I think, you know, the next question leads on to kind of say, and this is from, I've lost it. Where is it? About being tested. Someone asked about being tested.
Russell Beaven. I think I've got
I'm reading the wrong bit. So Russell Beaven says, I would ask if we've really been tested yet defensively. I worry about our height and strength from set pieces from better opposition. Yeah. Nelson Binden have been great so far. What are your thoughts? I'm going to kind of take that wider, Russell, and talk about being tested in general, because that links to the last question we had. Have we actually been tested?
Yeah, and I think he's actually right, Russell, to bring out the height and strength and all that kind of stuff, because that's where Button made some good saves on Saturday against Stevenage, and he did it from crosses, from corners mostly. So, yeah, I do think that we have, you know, there's definitely still development to come there from the defenders. And it's a question worth asking, right? Like, we've beaten a mediocre Cheltenham team that Luke Southwood was able to keep in the game, and we've beaten 10 men of Stevenage for 70 minutes. So Yeah, it's a little tough to fully say that we've been really tested, but on the other hand, we've lost a game 1-0 to Port Vale. So football's weird like that. You know, you can only play what's in front of you. And I think we just need to take encouragement, like I was saying, from the defensive displays and the fact that it's two clean sheets in a row, as well as playing some exciting football.
I mean, we'll talk about this in a bit, but I personally think the test comes this weekend against Exeter, because that's what I would class as a proper League One game. At a proper, well-run, you know, balanced, good club. And I think if we can get a result this weekend, any sort of positive result, that really starts to kind of tick us over a little bit. But we'll talk about that in the preview in just a bit. Laurie Johnson has asked a question about Jaden Wareham. He's obviously with us at the moment, in basically playing in the PL2 and the under-21s. I'm not going to answer that, Laurie, because I'm hoping to get to the game tomorrow night, so Friday, or tonight, if you listen to this on Friday, against Newcastle at the Select Carleton Stadium. Don't know why I paused. Everyone knows what I mean. I'm not just turning up to a car dealership to watch a game of football. But yeah, we play Newcastle under-21s, and I'm hoping that it's open to the public. And if it's not, I might try and play a card to get in if I can. Anyway, I'm going to try and get to the game regardless, because I think it'd be good to kind of scout out some of those players. So I hope, Laurie, I can answer that question in a little bit more detail when I've actually seen him play. So I'm going to park that one. Final question from Alistair. One word answer for you, Ross. Who takes penalties now that Carroll is out of the picture? Shoot.
Savage.
Good answer.
Yeah,
he said Smith, but obviously he's out, and I think he meant when Smith comes back. But
right,
yeah,
right.
I'm like whoever fancies it on the day. Do you know what I mean? Like,
I
love a bit of kind of, you know, democracy when it comes to penalty taking. Whoever feels confident is what I'd go with.
Yeah, I think there are so few actual like penalty stopping goalkeepers in the world, and none of them exist in League One, really. So like, my theory of penalties is always, just don't care about what's going on around you and blast it into the top corner. Yeah. So like,
always think it's to do with the kicker rather than the goalkeeper. Always.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I know goalkeepers listen to this, be like, shut up. But like, right. I'm not disrespecting your art. I'm just saying it's solely down to whether or not, you know, the person striking the ball hits the net.
Right. Penalties are more about the size of your cojones than your foot, basically, you know, like so
it's up here, psychology. That's what it
exactly.
is.
Exactly. And Savage had to grow up with Robbie Savage in his house. So, I mean, like, he's clearly, you know, he's been through some stuff.
Yeah. Absolutely. We are going to head into the preview now against the Grecians, which is a lovely nickname for a football team. So we are going to be right back with the preview for our game on Saturday.
There's another huge game ahead for the Royals. So be loud and be proud for the big match preview.
Welcome back to Tilehouse End, podcast number 348. We are back for this segment of the show with the preview against Exeter. Right, Ross, we talked earlier about being tested. I feel like this is going to be our first proper test, maybe since the kind of the opening day. And I know that that's probably being a little bit arrogant. Obviously, we lost to Port Vale somewhat unexpectedly. But in terms of how teams are starting to balance, and I know it's only four games into the season, but Exeter find themselves up in seventh place, having won two games, drawn one and lost one, scored a fair number of goals as well. They got, you know, plus four goal difference for this time of year, which is, you know, reasonably impressive. What's the best outcome from this game for us? You know, developing a system, developing a team ethic, developing a style of play, you know, still bedding those youngsters in, average age of like 22 point something, I think, was against, you know, Cheltenham. What's the outcome for this game? What are you hoping for here?
If they go with the kids again, then I think it's going to be a case of wanting to see some of that maturity on show, because they did well to get through the previous two games, you know, obviously somewhat helped with Stevenage by having the red card, but both of those games were played at home. Both of those games were played at, you know, if not in front of raucous crowds, then at least friendly crowds, right? So we're going to want to see that they can go on the road in, you know, the league and actually put on a good display, not be jarred by the crowd or anything like that. I understand, obviously, that they played away against Millwall, a lot of them in the Fizzy Cup, but I don't necessarily think that that was a crazy fan environment either that night. The images I've seen of the Millwall attendance that night were pretty low, which, you know, there's a cup game early in the season against a lower league team. You can understand that. So, yeah, I think it's going to be a case of managing their play while also managing one of the first, you know, fully professional away games a lot of them will have actually played before, you know, with a crowd and everything. So, yeah, going to be really interesting to see. Exeter have not considered many goals at all. Their only loss is to Portsmouth, you know, who are a promotion candidate, and they blank Blackpool as well. So yeah, it's going to be difficult for us to break through, and I think that Nelson, Abby and Tyler Bindon are gonna, you know, they're gonna see a lot more of the ball than they had to see in terms of what it's not in their possession, you know, on Saturday. So it should be an interesting one.
Thank you for calling it the Fizzy Cup, which is exactly what it is. You know, maybe that'll get trending at some point. I don't know. But yeah, I appreciate you calling it that, because that's what I've always called it. It's had so many bizarre names over the years. But yeah, you're right. I mean, I think in terms of so much hostility, but, you know, we've sold out the away end, which again is hugely impressive given where we've been over the last few years. But it's a really good place to go and watch football. You know, it's a good club. Well run, you know, obviously there's incredible links with Eamon Dolan, which I know there's a kind of a celebration, really, if you like, on 48 minutes, you know, to mark his life and his contribution to both clubs, which I think is a wonderful thing to do from Exeter's point of view. Obviously links, you know, Pierce Sweeney is still down there, was a good player for us for a period of time, and obviously then moved on. But, you know, this really is going to be, you know, a test for this team. And I know that Wing and Smith are out, so I don't see any major changes to the team in terms of subs coming on. One thing to note is that against Crystal Palace at the weekend, the under-21s won 2-0. And in that game, we had Dorset and Abreu, who played exactly 60 minutes, which, as Mark mentioned in the group chat for the Tyler's end, that just spells of kind of an injury comeback. So I think they're probably still a way away. I would expect them to play tomorrow night against Newcastle in the under-21s game. But they appear to be sort of pushing, you know, you would expect them in a match day squad, really, certainly Abreu anyway. So that might be coming, you know, potentially after the international break, which we now have, bizarrely. You never thought we'd get that again, but massive club, who knows? Yeah. In terms of kind of, you know, obviously we want to win the game, but I'm not going to ask you for a crass score prediction, but, like, do you expect us to get something out of the game, or would you go, do you know what, I'll just take a draw? Because personally, I don't think we're going to get anything out of the game. I think we'll lose on something.
I guess I'm not as convinced by Exeter, definitely in terms of it being like a big, you know, like a big team, a big team, and, you know, like the crowd will get behind them and all those kinds of things. But I don't know how much they're going to be that's a really, really tricky one, isn't it? I think we'll get something out of the game. Yeah. I think that we have two losses, right? Two wins so far, and this is where the draw comes in. It's not going to be like that season. I think it was under Paunovic in his first season, whereby we didn't draw until like November or something like that. It was just madness either way. No, I can see us getting a draw out of this one. I think that the kids are good, right? And they're good in this division. And regardless of Exeter being good or bad, you know, they're still a team that's come out of League Two in the last 5 years. So they're not like one of the teams that I had in my sort of promotion candidates in the early part of the season. I'd like to see our team go down there and play without any fear. And if they can do that, I don't see why they can't get a result here.
I think that the positive really is that we've had a week to prepare for it. And obviously we had the open training session, which was great for people that went. But, you know, having that week with this young side to really kind of go, you know, this is a game plan, this is a setup, this is what we're doing and the intensity of what we want to play. And I don't want to come across as like Tim Pot and all the rest of it, but I feel like we will lose, potentially we'll lose the game on Saturday. I'm all right with that. I'm fine with that because, you know, this I feel like this is going to be quite a good benchmark and a kind of not a reality check, because that's really dramatic, isn't it? It's a one game, but I just feel this might be a game too far in this current block at the moment. Obviously with Emery Group, and we've got, you know, Ipswich at home on Tuesday in the Fizzy Cup, which I would imagine there will be changes made, ironically, for those senior players coming in, for the younger players potentially. But again, I'd still like us to progress in that tournament. So I think it's positive for the fan base. And then, of course, we're back round to Monday. So we've got kind of almost a week to prepare for Cambridge, which bizarrely is on Sky. I mean, fair play, but like, that's just ruined a perfectly good weekend for a lot of people, in my opinion. But anyway, so yeah, it's going to be an interesting one. Kind of looking forward to seeing the outcome of that, and
I'll say
hopefully,
one more
yeah.
nice thing about it, Ben. If we do lose this weekend, and like you, I won't be too frustrated if we do, but at least this group of players will probably learn something from the experience, and I'm not entirely sure what some of those players who have been frozen out learned from losing 1-0 to Port Vale. So yeah, I think it's good to have a positive young team going in the right direction.
Couple of other bits just to round off. The women start their championship campaign this weekend against Crystal Palace. They're away, and then they're back home the following weekend against Charlton for the first game of the season, I believe, on the Saturday. We are due to have kind of a women's preview coming up. It's kind of like a one-off, and we'll do that sort of next week at some point. We've also got the women's management team coming on in a couple of weeks' time to discuss the start of the season, which should be quite good if you're interested in the women's team. The under-18s beat Norwich 2-1, and as I said earlier, the under-21s beat Palace 2-0 as well. And obviously, the first team have done really well. So I don't know when the last time we had a weekend where all of our, you know, kind of our main teams won, if that makes sense. Obviously, the women didn't play, but you know, that's quite an impressive feat, really. Final point to end on, and this is not mine. I'm gonna reference this person, Big Bad Wolf on Twitter, reminiscent of Jason Roberts' promotion season, you know, 2011, 2012, which was a fantastic season to be
Great
a Reading
season.
fan. They said that both the men's and the women's goalkeeping World Cup tournament players both played for Reading, and that blew my mind. So
Okay.
the last two World Cups. I probably haven't said that right. The
Wow.
last two World Cups, men's and women's. So we're talking Emi Martinez, Mary Earps, both won goalkeeper of the tournament, so Golden Glove respectively.
I gotcha. Okay. Yep.
And they
Yep.
both played for Reading, right?
Right.
That's insane.
That
What
is
a
pretty
stat
good.
that is.
There's a really around the stadium inside. There are some nice like things up saying, "Oh, great defenders, great midfielders from the past or whatever." And there's a goalkeeper's one there. And every time I see it now, which is admittedly not super often, but when I do see it, first thing I think of is always that has to be changed over to a picture of Emi Martinez holding the freaking World Cup like any day now, right? Like I understand he was just a loan signing, but an ex-Reading player has won the World Cup. We should be celebrating.
And I saw that and I was like, that's pretty cool, right? That's, you know, little old Reading on kind of the world, piggybacking the world stage with that. Yeah. On that note, you know, quick mention about the Lionesses. Well, not quick, so that's doing them a disservice. Did you watch the game?
I did, yeah. It was early morning for me, but yeah, I did, of course, watch the Lionesses.
You know what? Look, as a very proud Welshman, I really wanted them to do it. You know, they are a really likable group of players. Always come across incredibly well spoken. You know, Serena obviously is fantastic as well. And it was, you know, I guess from an England point of view, it's very, very difficult if you've invested in it as well. But yeah, it's a tough one, really, really, really tough one for them. But you know, congratulations for getting out fire and you know, really, when you look at the stats over the last few years for that team collectively, it's quite phenomenal, really. So you know, no one from that setup will be listening to this, but. You know, we just thought we'd say that anyway. So, you know, well done for everything you did there. We will be back next week. We'll be back normal, hopefully.
Yeah, sooner rather than later, I think. You'll
Yeah,
be sick
we'll
of
do
hearing.
Monday.
Yeah.
We'll talk about the Exeter game, and then we'll kind of have a look at the week ahead, really. We'll do it Monday, because then we've got kind of Ipswich and then Cambridge to look at the week after, but we'll deal with that when we get to it. This is what, our fifth or sixth podcast. So I just want to say at this point, you know, if you're still listening, thank you so much for listening to what we do. I've had a lot of positive feedback, some criticisms as well. That's fine. It's not for everybody, but you know, we try and do the best job that we can, and ultimately we enjoy sort of talking about our football club, really. So, you know, if you enjoy listening, that's brilliant, and we're glad to have you with us. Ever got any questions or any comments or anything, you know, feel free to let us know. But, you know, we appreciate the support. And I think Wim said that we'd gone up sort of 80 places or so in the UK football podcast.
On the right, yeah. So tell your friends, you know.
Yeah, like you listen to the 110th ranked UK-based football podcast.
Thanks. Okay. Well,
there you go. I mean, I was going to make a joke about there being only 111, but
and it's not even fully UK-based either. But you know, we're doing
exactly. We're Anglo-American-based. So yeah, this is the point. Anyway, yep. we're just waffling and being egotistical maniacs. So we will bid you farewell for the evening, or the morning, or lunchtime if you're listening at any other part of the day. Have a really good weekend, bank holiday weekend. Don't turn up to work on Monday, because you're not supposed to be there. Enjoy the game against Exeter. If you're at the Reading Festival this weekend and you're listening to us, thank you. Enjoy it. Get back to listen to some proper music and some proper artists, and we will see you again next week. Come on, Reading.